Today, could a breakthrough in the Madeleine McCann case finally lay to rest a story that has become a British obsession?
Guten Tag erstmal, herzlich willkommen hier bei der Staatsanwaltschaft Braunschweig. Schön, dass Sie gekommen sind. Mein Name ist Christian Wolters, ich bin erster Staatsanwalt.
Last week, prosecutors in Germany held a press conference to update the media on a story that has gripped the world for over a decade.
Im Zusammenhang mit dem Verschwinden des dreijährigen britischen Mädchens Madeleine Beth McCann am 3. Mai 2007 aus einer Apartmentanlage in...
After 13 long years, the search for answers in the Madeleine McCann case could be nearing its conclusion. A German man who is currently in prison is now the prime suspect and is being investigated on suspicion of her murder. He's also being linked to cases of other missing children. German police say they have substantial evidence that Madeleine is dead, but need more information from the public to bring the suspect to court. It is a devastating development for Madeleine's parents, Kate and Jerry McCann, who say that they have never given up hope of finding her alive. But this could at last bring to a close a search that began in Portugal but has extended across the world, involving thousands of police officers and costing millions of pounds. From The Guardian, I'm Rachel Humphreys. Today in Focus, the disappearance of Madeleine McCann, how a tragedy became a national obsession. Esther Adley, you reported on the Madeleine McCann story back in 2007. Take us back. Do you remember when you first heard about the case?
I do remember where I was when I first heard about it. I was actually in Edinburgh covering a murder trial, and I was in the press room with a number of other journalists waiting for the verdict. And the news about this child's disappearance came across the TV or whatever it was we were watching.
Breaking news for you this morning. We're just hearing that a search is underway for a three-year-old British girl who's gone missing in the Algarve area of Portugal, and she went missing last night. Hundreds of people have been searching for the girl, and that search continuing this morning. So we will try to get as much on that as for you as soon as we can. We can speak now to Dan Mason, who's a journalist who works in that area. Dan, thanks for joining us on Sky News Sunrise this morning. What are the details that you've gleaned so far?
She's 3 years old, answers to the name of Madeleine or Maddie, fair hair, and...
We all looked at each other and knew that this was going to be a big story. This was almost a picture-perfect couple, two doctors with their beautiful children in this amazingly gorgeous little resort, and they had experienced really every parent's worst nightmare.
How did you end up reporting on the case?
I flew to Praia da Luz a few days after the disappearance of Madeleine, and it was a very, very strange atmosphere. There were quite a lot of families there, and you could see people were nervous. You know, they were keeping their children close. And of course, at the same time, there were just people arriving from all across the world, journalists like myself, TV crews, everywhere.
Do you live here? Do you think it is safe to live here?
Yes. Yeah, it's very
safe. Judiciária também declarações dos pais, sabe-se que na tradição britânica e também norte-americana muitas vezes
around this tiny little town, and particularly around this apartment where Kate and Jerry McCann and their family had been staying when Madeleine disappeared.
Tonight, Madeleine's parents, Jerry and Kate, are still waiting desperately for news. And with every hour that passes, the questions only grow and the sense of dread mounts.
What were the facts of the case that were established in those first few days?
Well, it's a great tragedy about Madeleine McCann's case that for all the millions of words that were written about the story and all the resources that have been poured into the investigation and all the scrutiny that the Portuguese investigation had, helped by the British and international police now, there really have been very few facts that have been established that are absolutely proven to be true. On the night of Thursday, the 3rd of May of 2007, Madeleine McCann was asleep with her two younger siblings. She was nearly four, but not quite, in this small apartment. And at some point in the evening, her parents were having dinner in a restaurant a little distance away. The family were checking periodically and friends were checking periodically at the children. And at one point, sort of between 9:30 and 10 o'clock, Madeline seems to have vanished. And beyond that, the facts that have been established without any question of doubt are very, very few.
What were your memories of the McCanns?
Oh, gosh.
Words cannot describe the anguish and despair that we are feeling as the parents of our beautiful daughter, Madeline.
They looked shell-shocked. They would occasionally sort of emerge to speak to media. I remember them doing a press conference quite soon after I arrived in the street.
And help us get her back safely. Please, if you have Madeline, let her come home to her mummy, daddy, brother and sister.
Mrs. McCann was holding a little toy called Cuddle Cat that had belonged to Madeline. And she didn't put it down that I saw for weeks and weeks. It sort of accompanied her everywhere. I mean, what can you say? Their daughter had disappeared. They were devastated.
Jerry and I would just like to express our sincere gratitude and thanks to everybody, but particularly the local community here who have offered so much support. I couldn't have asked for more. I just want to say thank you. Please continue to pray for Madeline. She's lovely.
What was the relationship like between the McCanns and with you and other journalists?
Well, in the early days, I think the McCanns were obviously eager to do whatever they could to help bring their daughter back. And if that meant speaking to the media, if that meant publicising their daughter in any way they could, then they were very, very willing to do that. They also, you know, within a few weeks of Madeline's disappearance, went on a sort of tour, for want of a better word, around Europe to speak to Spanish investigators, Spanish journalists. They went to the Vatican, they saw the Pope.
Today, a meeting the pontiff was an experience that has very mixed emotions for us. In ordinary circumstances, of course, it would be the highlight of any Catholic to come and meet the Pope.
They were trying to sort of spread the word across Europe.
We do wish to publicise her disappearance in the hope that somebody has information, either knowing where she is or knowing who may have taken her. And we appeal to people all over the world.
I mean, there was such a huge appetite for this story, wasn't there?
It's like nothing I've ever seen before. There were stories told about the number of sales that you could get as a tabloid newspaper if you put Madeline on the front page. And the appetite for information from people back home was enormous. I think there was a there was an enormous public empathy for this poor little girl and for her parents, certainly initially. And there was also a sort of fascination with the story because it became a sort of national talking point.
I think the McCanns are hypocrites and the people are openly are hypocrites.
Why so?
Why? Because at the end of the day, if it was people on council estates, we'd get our children taken off of us. They're doctors, they should show an example. They went on holiday, they've got a big house, they've got money. At the end of the day, why didn't they pay for babysitting facilities or take a nanny with them? They wanted to go on holiday with the children, they shouldn't want to leave them.
We've had hundreds and hundreds of calls here to BBC Radio Leicester, like this call to The Breakfast Show from Denise.
It was a small fishing village when we went. You know, for people to cook the parents leaving the children, I think is very unfair because it was, oh, it's safe, it's safe, it's safe. And, you know, you can actually see the apartments, but the apartments you're looking at are there, the bedrooms are at the back. And they've all got these very heavy metal shutters. And I can't understand how one person could have lifted them up because they are extremely heavy shutters.
You can never leave your child alone in a house, in a hotel room. And
one of the things that had sort of puzzled people a little bit about them was that they had always seemed quite composed and they didn't weep and wail.
And certainly when I've come across similar cases or cases of child harm in the past, I thought, how do people get through that? How do people
and you just don't know how you behave. We didn't know we'd be able to come and publicise it, you know, but we've got to send it from somewhere, and we believe it's vitally important, you know. And I can understand why people would say, how can they do that? Because I would have.
But how do you go with these feet? You seem, you are, you know, relax is not the right word, but you seem very... well spoken, you think about what do you say? How do you feel when you're sitting here and talking about this awful thing, what happened?
I think, you know, we're not going to talk about what happened in detail. Emotionally, that is incredibly difficult to talk about how we were, and, you know, at the time. But
I think for a lot of people, it couldn't see how they would have been able to react in that way. Couldn't imagine themselves being that strong in that situation. And it was one of the reasons why people sometimes felt that the McCanns didn't react the way that they expected them to. And that may have been one of the reasons why people were open to being suspicious of them as time went on.
Sandra Leville, you were The Guardian's crime correspondent in 2007. If you were to describe a textbook criminal investigation into a case like this, what would it look like?
So if you talk to homicide detectives in any crime like this where a young child goes missing, it's really important to capture the evidence early on, that golden hour of evidence. So whether it's fingerprints or a broken window or a child dropping something. One detective I know, he talks about clearing the ground in front of your feet as you walk forward. So you put your nose down and you look in front of you and you clear it inch by inch, the ground in front of you, until you reach out, out, out. And that's an attempt to not miss anything. While you're doing those searches, you're also looking at the obvious suspects. And the obvious suspects in a homicide or a abduction tend to be initially the parent. They have to be looked at. And then if they're cleared, it's the known sex offenders in the area. That's what police would always do. The itinerants, the sex offenders, people who have been convicted. Are there any in the area?
The Portuguese police, did they do any of that?
The Portuguese police didn't seem to treat it as a crime initially from what they did. They didn't seal off the scene and they didn't do a fingertip search. And there was already tension in that McCanns had said that there was a window that had been broken into. It looked like a break-in. And the Portuguese police were saying publicly, there wasn't a break-in, there wasn't a break-in. And I remember talking to relatives of the McCanns very early on saying, we said the window latch was broken. It was being treated as a child wandering off or maybe even already by then suspicion of the parents.
What was the evidence that led the Portuguese police to think that Kate and Jerry McCann had done this?
I'm not sure there was any evidence initially. I think there was a suspicion, and that was crystallised with the use of a British sniffer dog who sniffed out scent of a corpse in the back of the car, in the boot of the car, which just set the whole issue of them being suspects off.
The sniffer dogs were also taken to check 10 vehicles. They only barked when they came to the McCann's hire car. The dogs jumped into the boot. Their reaction was widely reported and was seen as damning evidence in Portugal.
How can you explain the coincidence of the scent of the cadaver felt by British and not Portuguese dogs?
Sandra, maybe you should be asking the judiciary, because they've examined all this.
But don't you, so you don't have any explanation for that?
Ask the dogs, Sandra.
Ask the dogs, no, Jerry. Now I think that I feel free to ask you. Don't you feel free to answer me?
I can tell you that we've obviously looked at evidence about cadaver dogs, and they're incredibly unreliable.
Unreliable?
Cadaver dogs, yes.
But there was a lot to discredit this evidence. For example, that car had been hired by the McCanns 25 days after Madeline had gone missing. So this theory rested on the pretty implausible idea that they had hidden her body for all that time while the eyes of the world's media were on them. And then there were also questions raised about whether the Portuguese investigators even knew how to use these dogs. What did you make of this theory at the time?
Detectives I spoke to at the time were saying this is one piece of apparent evidence, but it has to be put into context with, did they have the means to kill the child? Did they have the time to move the body? What's the motive here? All of those things have to feed into an investigation. You can't just take one piece of evidence, isolate a piece of evidence, and then make a case around it. But when this piece of evidence or apparent evidence emerged, it allowed the media to run with the idea that the McCanns had been responsible. And even though had they stopped to think or had they looked around, they might have paused. There was no pausing. It set the media on an absolute frenzy.
Esther, you've talked about how the McCanns initially welcomed the media focus on their story, perhaps in part because they didn't have a lot of faith in the Portuguese investigation. First, the coverage of them was sympathetic, but we know now that it didn't stay that way. When did things change?
I think the relationship had sort of been souring throughout the summer, partly because the Portuguese police had been leaking things into the Portuguese media, which were defensive of the police and sort of critical of the family. But it sort of broke into the open, I think, when police officially named Kate and Jerry McCann as our Guidos.
With barely a look up at the cameras, Kate McCann emerged this afternoon, officially now a suspect in the disappearance of her own daughter.
This term meaning official suspect or person of interest. And there was this sort of extraordinary thing where they visited the police station in a nearby town, and as they emerged from the police station, Kate McCann was booed.
There were some whistles from the crowd, but also a few shouts of support. Those closest to her are adamant she is innocent, but they acknowledge the shocking possibility that the police may soon charge Kate with Madeline's death.
I think they were quite shocked by that, but obviously devastated, because not only had police that were meant to be looking for their child named them as people of interest, but it was clear that some sections of the crowd watching were also very, very hostile to them. What happened at that point was it suddenly gave permission to those people who had taken against the McCanns for whatever reason to sort of say, yeah, I never really liked the cut of their jib. Why didn't she cry more? They seem a bit cold-hearted to me. The fact that they had been named Arguidos led to, over time, a type of reporting that became more and more outrageous, really, in the way that the McCanns were described in some news outlets, and very much not all, but in some news outlets, some of what was written about them was blatantly libelous in the most outrageous degree.
Yeah, I think many people will have been shocked by some of the headlines written about the McCanns, which range from directly accusing them of killing their own daughter to even saying they'd sold her into slavery, all accusations which were completely false.
If I think about it, it's hard to think of many people who have received worse treatment from some sections of the British press than Kate and Jerry McCann. That relationship was incredibly destructive, and I think has a really good claim to be the most dishonourable period, really, of a really bad, bad period in British journalistic history.
And that intrusion into the McCann's life and the accusations made against them by the press continued, even after the Portuguese police shelved their investigation and lifted the McCanns' Arguido status in 2008. But this bad period of journalistic history was examined at the Leveson Inquiry into Press Ethics in 2011. Kate and Jerry McCann gave evidence to that inquiry. What did they say?
It was a pretty shattering thing to listen to.
These were desperate times, you know. We were having to try and find our daughter ourselves, and we needed all the help we could get, and we were faced with, and I know we'll come onto headlines, but corpse in the car. I don't know how many times I read body fluids in the car, and it gets repeated that often that becomes fact. There were no body fluids, you know, and we desperately wanted to shout out, it's not true, it's not true. But when it's your voice against the powerful media, you know, it just doesn't hold weight. And you know, we're desperately shouting out internally, please stop what you're doing. I mean, we're trying to find our daughter and you were stopping our chances of finding her.
We were being tried by the media and unable to defend ourselves.
Mrs. McCann at one point said that she had felt like climbing into a hole and not getting out. And that came because her diary, which had been taken as evidence by the Portuguese police, had appeared one day in the News of the World. And her most intimate thoughts written to her private diary.
You know, I'd written these words and thoughts at the most desperate time in my life. I mean, most people won't have to experience that. And it was my only way of communicating with Madeleine. And for me, you know, there was absolutely no respect shown for me as a grieving mother or as a human being, or for my daughter. And it made me feel very vulnerable and small. I just couldn't believe the injustice. And, you know, I actually just recently read through my diary entries at that point, at that week, and I talk about climbing into a hole and not coming out because I just felt so worthless that we've been treated like this.
You know, Kate and Jerry McCann have already gone through the worst thing that can happen to a parent. On the other hand, they have been through an experience that I think is sort of uniquely dreadful, and at the hands of some sections of the British media. And it was quite clear when they spoke at Leveson that they'd had a kicking, for want of a better way of putting it. But, you know, they're a very strong couple, and it was quite clear that they just want to focus on finding their daughter and finding out what happened to her. I think that is, in some ways, the thing that has driven them for the past 13 years. And they've been absolutely doggedly focused on that.
Sandra, it's in the same year as Leveson, 2011, that Prime Minister David Cameron announced that he was asking Scotland Yard to review the details of the McCann case.
David Cameron has written to Kate and Jerry McCann saying the Met will cast a fresh eye on the evidence. The McCann family say it's a step in the right direction.
And immediately, the idea that the McCanns had anything to do with their daughter's disappearance was dismissed by Simon Foy, who was head of homicide at the Metropolitan Police at that time.
Even on the first glance of what we looked at, and when we took the information back and ran it through our own understanding and, you know, verified sightings and accounts and statements and all the rest of it, it was perfectly clear to us that the McCanns themselves had nothing at all to do with the actual disappearance.
Why?
Because it was just obvious from, you know, that everything stacked up, that they, you know, they were where they were when the child went missing.
And this is an investigation that has come under a lot of scrutiny, both the amount of money it's cost, more than £11 million, and the amount of time that is being spent on looking for one child while so many investigations are dropped. It's still ongoing, but what has it managed to achieve so far?
They've certainly shaken down the evidence, and they've looked through the evidence. They've gone through all the cell site mobile phone evidence. They've come up with hundreds of suspects, and then they've sifted them down further. They've gone back over a huge investigation and tried to put the jigsaw together. And what they've achieved, we don't yet know. They've certainly given, I think, the McCanns more peace of mind that at least someone is looking at this properly. And I think their work has led to tip-offs and information coming forward about the latest German suspect, the paedophile.
After this, how the police secured a breakthrough in the Madeleine McCann investigation. Sandra, it seemed like the trail had gone cold in this case, and then last week there was this breakthrough. Where did it come from?
Publicity around the 10th anniversary of Madeleine's disappearance. In the UK, the parents did a lot of interviews. The Metropolitan Police held a press conference, appealing again for information. And then in Europe as well, in Germany, there were press conferences and a sort of crime watch programme. And that led to information coming forward about Christiane Bruckner, the German paedophile, who's now the prime suspect.
And what do we know about him?
Well, so he seems to be an archetypal, itinerant child abuser who has been one step ahead of the system throughout his criminal career, just looking at the biog of his crimes and his life that is emerging. He's a German who spent a lot of time in Portugal. In fact, he seems to have shuttled between Portugal and Germany. Every time he gets in trouble in Germany, he flits to Portugal. He seems to have escaped the German justice system at least three times. First in 1995, when he fled to Portugal from a jail sentence in Germany for sexually abusing children in 1995, as early as that. He was then later jailed in 2006 in Portugal for theft. So he committed crimes in Portugal. He then goes back to Germany, and then in 2016 again he flees to Portugal when facing prosecution for sexually abusing a child. He was extradited back to Germany in 2017 and started serving a sentence for drug offences. Then in December last year, just December 2019, he was convicted of the rape of a 72-year-old woman, American woman, who lived in Praia da Luz in Portugal, half a mile from where Madeleine McCann was abducted. And this happened in 2005, so 2 years before Madeleine McCann was abducted. He's only just been brought to justice for that crime. That's one part of the evidence that puts him there. There's much more compelling evidence that puts him within a mile of the apartment before she was abducted. In 2007, the mobile phone evidence shows he had a phone call, and the phone call puts him in the vicinity of the apartment on the night she went missing. He lived in a farmhouse in Praia da Luz. He'd lived there for many years. And he moved out of that place shortly after she went missing. He also changed the registration of his car that he had in Portugal the day after Madeleine McCann went missing. He changed the registration. He got a friend, apparently, to put the registration in his name in Germany. He's well known. He's well known to the German officials. He could have been well known to the Portuguese. It seems he might have been looked at. We're not clear about this, but this is a man with a history of abusing children, a history of burglary, a history of drugs offences. And like I said at the beginning, you know, he's a sex offender. One look at him when you're clearing the ground in front of you maybe should have led them to focus a little more on him in the first place.
And we should say he is currently appealing that 2019 rape conviction, but you've just laid out a string of crimes to his name. Would you have expected the police investigation might have been able to identify him as a key suspect earlier on in the case?
That's a big question. I don't know, but I think that he should have been one of the people that you would have looked at. You should have looked at known sex offenders. Now, the Portuguese might well say they didn't know he was a sex offender. He hadn't actually at the time committed sex offences that they knew about in Portugal. But, you know, this was 2007. This wasn't 1980s. We have a European arrest warrant. We have apparent cooperation between countries in Europe. It seems to me there was extraordinary lack of eyes on this man, given his history.
Do we know if there's any physical evidence linking him to this crime?
I don't. I think it's interesting to see that they've identified him as way back in 2017. He was identified as a key suspect in the McCann case. 3 years have gone by in which we're told the British police and the German police have been doing an awful lot of work on this man. And I think it's interesting that last week they chose to identify him in Germany and Britain. To me, that smacks of, we haven't got any physical evidence. We need to put out another appeal to get more information. Maybe the last throw of a dice to get some information, some evidence on him. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they have got forensic evidence and they're just putting this out there to see what else they can get. It's interesting that the German police have said very clearly this is a murder investigation. The British police have always called it a missing persons inquiry because they have no evidence that the child has been harmed.
Sandra, the incompetency of the initial investigation left a vacuum, really, which was filled by disgraceful media coverage. And these things combined have left a trail of devastation that we haven't even had time to go into here. People's lives ruined after they were falsely accused of abducting Madeleine, and even the case of a woman who took her own life after the media reported on her trolling of the family. And of course, the awful treatment of the McCanns themselves. But up until now, barely any new facts have emerged in this case. So what has sustained this story for quite so long?
I think it's a combination of factors. This is a beautiful little girl on holiday in Portugal, and those images of that child I mean, people buy the newspapers when she's on the front cover. That's a fact. So that's one reason it's carried on. I think also her parents have persisted in pursuing her, what's happened to her, trying to find out what's happened to her. And that maybe has annoyed some people, but to their mind, I'm sure they want to know what's happened to their daughter, and their hope and tenacity has been extraordinary. In terms of the criticism about other cases don't receive this kind of attention, it's interesting that Bruckner is now suspected of the abduction and killing of 4 children, including Madeleine. So if this case is solved, you can see how possibly the cases of 3 other murdered children might also be solved. And that would be a great testament to the tenacity of the McCann parents.
What will it mean for the family for this case to be concluded, do you think?
I'm sure for the family, I think they talked on the 10th anniversary about their hope, that their continued hope that she was still alive and their belief that she was still alive.
You don't realise how strong you are until you have no option, and I think that's very true. Obviously, massive events like this cause a lot of reaction, a lot of trauma and upset, but ultimately you have to keep going, and especially when you've got other children involved.
My hope of Madeleine being out there is no less than it was almost 10 years ago.
And it was quite touching that Jerry McCann spoke about the extraordinary stories of people who'd been abducted in their youth, in their childhood, and who had since been found alive, like J.C. Dugard in California, who was found in 2009 after being abducted at the age of 11. And he said at the time in this interview to Sky News that he thought that that would be what would happen with Madeleine.
Some of the scenarios with other people who have been abducted and kept, that's just so unbelievable that you think, that how could that have happened? And that's probably what's going to happen with Madeleine's case.
And when you hear that and then you see what's happening now, you just feel this pain for them. But I think also the family have said they do just want to know now, to have some peace. So knowing is better than not knowing.
Esther, it's clear that a conclusion to this case would mean so much to the McCann family. But what do you think this would mean for a country that is still so obsessed with this case?
I think what it would mean in a broader sense is, you know, if someone were to be convicted, it would obviously be a great vindication to them who have had to suffer for a long time under suspicion, very unfairly in my view. And it would also, I think, be a moment that probably Britain needs to look at itself a little bit and say, well, you know, how did that happen? People were pointing out that actually there was no evidence to implicate them, and yet they had to suffer what they did. How did that happen?
You can read more about the latest developments in the Madeleine McCann case and follow Sandra and Esther's reporting on other stories at theguardian.com. That's it for today and this week. This episode was produced by Joshua Kelly and Courtney Youssef. Sound design was by Axel Kakutier. The executive producers are Phil Maynard and Nicole Jackson. Have a lovely weekend, and we'll be back on Monday.